Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense.
We promote learning alternatives, home education, critical thinking, peaceful parenting, organization and productivity, and better communication strategies.
Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get comprehensive show notes, relevant links,
or to just leave comments.
Follow us on Twitter at School Sucks Show. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username School Sucks Podcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project.
Hey everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks. Today is March 25th, and we are winding down our March theme, the creative pursuit. Still a couple shows left, but this was a big one for me. Today's guest is somebody whose work has had just a tremendously positive impact on my life. It is David Allen, the creator of Getting Things Done. Oh, but wait, I'm sorry. Is this the first time you've ever heard the School Sucks podcast? Oh, let me back up a little bit. I've been doing this show since August of 2009. I used to be a teacher, and then I went on to work in some more lucrative areas of educational service, primarily SAT tutoring and college consulting. I ran a little tutoring business up here on the beautiful New Hampshire seacoast. And I started the show as a kind of an audio journal about some of my frustrations in the whole schooling system, public and private, and higher, finger quotes, education on finger quotes. What I learned was there was a huge difference between schooling and education, and I began this dialogue, this presentation, to demonstrate that difference. I really wanted to, after so many years of doing this show, ram that idea home in 2016, and I thought we would devote entire months of this year to exploring really, really important themes in self-knowledge, self-education, and self-improvement. That's what we focus on here. I don't need to tell you that school sucks. You went there. So we have 400 plus episodes worth of archives from before 2016 that I highly recommend you check out. You go to schoolsucksproject.com. You can just kind of go through and see what's there that you might like and what might pique your interest. But one of the unifying themes of everything we do is a quest for more individual freedom. And even if you've never really made this explicit to yourself, that is probably one of the driving forces behind your initial interest in something like Getting Things Done, more individual freedom. But it goes way beyond the world of productivity and organization, so I hope you will check out more of what we do here. Anyway, thanks for listening to this episode. Let's get back to David Allen. I could have talked to David for 3 hours about this topic, but we really wanted to focus on the connection between GTD and creativity. He had a lot to say on the subject. You know, I was first handed a copy of the first edition of Getting Things Done, I think in 2010, by my webmaster at the time. He had like a stack of these books, and he used to give them out to people saying, hey, you know, I heard you like to talk about getting things done. If you're serious about that, I'd like to let you know that this book has been a good guide for me. And I remember the way that this friend of mine organized his space. We actually lived together for a while when we were kind of ramping up the whole School Sucks thing back in 2010. And we had an office, and everything in his part of the office had a label on it. And I said, this is the behavior of a madman. You know, labeling things, that seemed to me like they catch a serial killer, and then the police give the media a guided tour of his home. The reporter says, look here, we go into the garage now, and you see that his weed whacker has a label on it that says, weed whacker. But I only had that perspective, you know, that I might be living with a serial killer, because I didn't know about the power of getting things done. The power of identification, generally, come to think of it, all his labels made sense. So he had encouraged me to read this book. He was one of the most productive people that I ever met. He went on to do some very, very cool things. Initially driven by passion and or principles, but ultimately led to profits. So I wish I had taken his advice and jumped into this in 2010, but it was 2013 when I saw that it was working for a couple of my other friends, namely Rich and Lisa and Tony Myers. And I said, I'm going to jump into this. And I was so enthusiastic, and my life was changed. And I remember this webmastermind, some of the ideas that he used to bring to me related to the show. And I'd be like, what makes somebody think of these things? And what I didn't realize at the time, I didn't have the vocabulary, is that he had the time and the space and therefore the freedom to really make some imaginative messes. And that's why I think GTD is so great for creative types. So David and I are going to talk about that today. Please remember to visit our website, schoolsucksproject.com, to see all the shows in March's theme, The Creative Pursuit. And if you were attracted to this particular audio because of our guest, you are going to be so excited when I tell you just 2 or 3 seconds from now that the entire month of January was devoted to a deeper look at productivity. In the summer of 2013, we also did a very thorough exploration of the topic of a series called Presence in Productivity, and David's book, Getting Things Done, was a centerpiece in those podcasts. In January 2015, I devoted an entire month to looking at the psychological and behavioral components of procrastination. If that's something you're still struggling with, I would recommend checking out those shows as well. That series, by the way, was called Stop Procrastinating Now! Or soon. That's a pretty cute name. But for right now, let's focus on David Allen and getting things done for creativity. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for checking out the show if you're new. I hope you stick around. I have to thank you, first of all, for your willingness to come on a show called School Sucks. When I named it that 6+ years ago, I didn't know that one day we would be recruiting such respectable guests from the business world.
Sure. Hey, I dropped out of graduate school, so, you know, apropos.
Ooh, so did I. That's interesting. Since I brought up one of the central themes in our show, let's actually start there. You do a lot of consulting, or you have in the past, you have for a long time, with a lot of high power, seemingly very successful CEOs. Are you still, you know, at this point in your career, surprised by the absence of certain skills? Like, people who appear very, very successful, you would think that these types of organizational skills would be really integral in an education that prepares people for success in the real world. But I guess you could even start when you began consulting. Were you really, like, shocked that people who were so successful could be, you know, so disorganized in their professional lives in some ways?
Well, I think it needs a little bit of a reframe.
Sure.
Brett, let me add a vector in here. The people most attracted to my work are the people who need it the least.
Mm.
It's already the most positive, productive, organized, proactive, aspirational people that are attracted to what I do. Because what I did was discover something that gets rid of drag on people's systems, gets rid of the barnacles on the ship. Right. And who's most interested in getting rid of drag? Fastest people.
Mm.
So interestingly enough, you know, the work that I do really is about unlocking a next level of space and creativity and game for people who are already in the game.
Yeah.
So yeah, over the years, it was a little surprising to me. I thought I was the last guy in the world to learn what I'd learned, and that the higher up I got, I was dealing with people who would make more money in a year than I'd see in my life. And, you know, the big surprise was, I thought they would have this nailed, but the higher up I went, the more hungry they were for it. So yeah, they've got, you know, you'd have to have some basic, you know, blocking and tackling to be able to get to those levels of game anyway. But it's that next extra little piece, that next, you know, I'm about to coach a guy right now, his presenting issue. I mean, this guy, if you saw his CV, you go, wow, you know, he at age 46, this guy is on top of his world. He is like, he's doing 6 gazillion things, highly successful. And his presenting issue was, David, I'm up to here. I am just hitting my stride. and I got no more room. And that's what I'm sort of supplying to him. So this is a pretty elegant and pretty sophisticated approach that I actually uncovered for myself first, and then I turned around and it worked with other people. So anybody who's totally out of control and disorganized is not even, probably doesn't even think they need what I do. They're not even at that level of game yet.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like the crotchety old golf pro. I'm running a little, you know, driving range in Podunk somewhere. And some high powered player has their plane has to land, but they want to keep their swing, and so they're out there on this funky little driving range that I'm running, and I walk up and I go, you know, I see a hitch in your swing. I'm not the golf pro, right? But I can see the hitch in their swing, and that's, I think, a better way to see what I uncovered and who's most interested in it.
Yeah, sure. There's a level of self-awareness that I think people have to really embrace this. And I think they also have to have a clear definition of the work that they're trying to do.
That said, Brett, we're now teaching this to 7, 8, and 9-year-olds.
That's terrific. So, I'm really excited to hear that.
It's a basic methodology, but that we're not born doing, and it doesn't happen automatically. You actually have to put some cognitive horsepower to make this game work with the best practices I came up with. Not a lot, but it's not free. So you have to have enough interest or just be coached from day one. Here's how you get things done. You define what done means and what doing looks like. And, you know, just that simple little algorithm itself is one most people aren't doing. So you can learn that. But again, it doesn't happen automatically. You weren't born and hop out of your mom and go, hey, mom, what exactly are we trying to accomplish? And what's the next step? Is that yours or mine?
it's learned behavior. Yeah. Don't you think there's a really basic process that is innate, a kind of input, process, output that the mind wants to go through? Identification, integration, and action would be one way that I would describe it. And I think that what was really so valuable for me about getting things done was having that process that I feel like is the impulse of the mind defined, to have it made explicit and then applied to my work, I think was the really helpful thing. You know, that being said, this would be review for a lot of my audience because we did a whole series on productivity in 2013. We did a review of it in January of this year, but there are definitely people who are listening or watching who are new to your work. I'm sure at this point you've developed a kind of GTD elevator speech. And I also know you have a new version of the book where you change some of the language related to your 5 steps. So could you just run through that really quickly for the people who might be unfamiliar?
Sure. And by the way, I didn't make this up. What I did, to your point, was I uncovered what we all do when you get your kitchen under control or your company under control or your desk under control is a 5-step process. Mm. And that's really some of the core methodology here. First of all, you need to capture or identify the things that are not on cruise control, that are not running on automatic. What's got your attention about your kitchen or this project or your life? So you capture first. Then you clarify exactly what that stuff means. Are you committed to move on this? And if so, what outcome are you after? And what's the action step you need to take to move it forward? That's the clarify step. Right. Step 3 is, once you've made those decisions, how do you organize those reminders appropriately? If you can't finish it in the moment, you're going to need to capture it somewhere in some trusted place, and your head's the worst place that you could put it. So, you know, a lot of this is about building the external brain so that you have a trusted systematic process to keep hold of these commitments that you have, the work at hand, if you will, outcomes and actions that you need to take and are committed to do. That's step 3 is organize. Step 4 then is to step back and reflect and review on that whole gestalt, you know, at all those different levels of commitments and horizons that we have commitments.
Yeah.
And then step 5 is to engage your attention or your consciousness or your focus or your resources based upon the first 4 steps. Now that I've captured, clarified, organized, and looked at everything, now I'm going to have a beer. I'm going to have a nap, or I need to work on my business plan for the bank, or whatever you decide to do at any point in time. But going through those steps, if those are done appropriately, then you're coming from a place of trust, not hope. And that's really the game. The end game is really, actually, frankly, the big secret here is that getting things done is not so much about getting things done. It's really about getting appropriately engaged with all the aspects of your life so you're totally present with what you're doing, because that's the most productive state to be coming from.
You know, one of the when I first introduced this to my audience back in 2013, one of the objections that I got, I mean, most people loved it and were so grateful for the book, and a lot of people in the audience went out and really embraced the process as well. But one criticism that came in that relates to the theme we're exploring this month on my show, people said, this really doesn't seem like it's ideal for creative types. I think that was my first assessment when I first saw the cover of the book in 2010. And I'm sure you've handled that objection before, David.
Yeah, well, now, you know, here's the ammunition I have. Talk to Joss Whedon.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to Howard Stern. Right. Howard's publicized me now for the last 6 months, changed his life, gave him the opportunity not only to keep serious radio running and keep his arms around all that, but to learn to paint.
Awesome. That's terrific.
Get space to do that. So Howard's a huge fan. Actually, he hired my coach as a COO now. So, yeah. So Howard's a big fan. You know, Joss Whedon, read back in Fast Company. I mean, he was when he made, you know, Much Ado About Nothing, you know, in his backyard in about 3 days, he said, David Allen's next action, you know, you got it. That's how I did this. One of my biggest fans over the years is a guy named Eben Taubenfeld, and Eben was Avril Lavigne's guitarist and producer in the early days of her career. Mm-hmm. And Eben's a big, huge fan of mine stuff. And he said, he put it pretty simply. He said, David, before GTD, I started 100 songs a year. After GTD, I finished 100 songs a year. So, you know, the whole idea of creativity, see, is really about, do you have room to be creative? And that's I think the real reason this hit such a nerve actually in the entertainment and the creative worlds out there. You know, the Simpson writers, they're all big fans of my stuff. Why? You need room to write comedy. you need brain space. You need a clear space to be able to be spontaneous and bounce off the wall or whatever. But if you're wrapped up around, I need cat food and my bank account and all the, you know, the business of life can eat you alive and, you know, keep that space from being available to you. So GTD produces space. What you do with it is quite up to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got people, you know, yes, I've got, you know, senior executives that are using that space this creates to, you know, to be more strategic and to think more strategically and back off and be able to lift up higher to be able to see a longer altitude and bigger horizons in terms of the games that they're playing, you know, which is always healthy. You know, stay-at-home parents are using this space to be able to lift up and see really how creative they can be with their kids in terms of raising them and you know, what to do about their education and so forth. So it creates room. And I understand, you know, the first edition of the book in 2001 was really targeted toward the fast-track professional because yeah. They were the ones at the bleeding edge of getting, you know, having to endure the beast of email, mm-hmm. you know, and what that was doing to them in terms of the stress and overwhelm and, you know, rapid change and input. So, yeah, it was targeted at that audience. But I've known from day one for the 35 years I've been doing this, you know, it is equally powerful and valuable. You know, for kids, for the clergy, for physicians, for teachers, for painters, for anybody who's leading a busy life that actually wants more room to be more creative, to be, you know, more anything, more present, more loving. You know, it's really that's really what this is about. I've known it from the beginning, but, you know, again, that was a little hard to publicize, and we were looking for the sweet spot out there in terms of who was really interested in this and had the resources and interest to then, you know, in engage in our education in the various forms. But now, as you may have, if you've read the new edition to the book, that's a lot of what I did in the new edition was reset this and reposition this as a lifelong lifestyle art of how you manage the flow of life's work. And that's useful for anybody.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Not to mention the fact that in 2001, I was a young professional at that time. I was working in marketing. We were in a way less friendly technical world, way less helpful technical world at the time. I want to bookmark Eben Taubenfeld because before we wrap up today, I want to talk about the process of weekly review. And I know he said something about his process that I thought was very interesting that, you know, related to my questions about maximizing a weekly review for creative work. But mm-hmm. Yeah, I just want to second what you're saying, that creating space in life, creating space in mind, how this encourages a kind of creative focus. You know, one of the biggest appeals for me was the ability to achieve a presence in life as it was happening, the only place where I could really act and impact. You know, you often use that phrase, appropriate engagement. But I was talking to an artist friend of mine recently about turning up a creative awareness, like really, really being mindful of your surroundings, whether they're social or they're natural, and having that availability and that presence. When you don't have it, I think you miss a lot of opportunities for creative thought.
Yeah. You know, another spin on this, Brett, too, is that I've had a number of people who have that. There's still that conditioning for a lot of artists and, quote, creative types out there, that suffering, you know, and hardship and the agony of the existential of life, you know, is really the seedbed of where your creative energy comes. And, you know, one thinks of Van Gogh, you know, cutting off his ear and, you know, and all that stuff. And I understand that, because, you know, a whole lot of even spiritual awareness, you know, the Zen folks will tell you, usually, you know, Zen enlightenment show up after some major crisis in your life where you finally have to give up, you know, certain things, and you kind of let go. And when you let go, you know, all kinds of cool stuff happens. So many times it is the pain and suffering that causes you to let go. But I had a guy, good friend of mine now, who's a big champion of my stuff, actually now a fairly high-powered Beverly Hills attorney. But he also writes music videos, and he's a highly creative type. And he used to think, you know, he was most creative when life just got so overwhelming, he just took everything and just threw it off his desk and said, I'm going to be creative. And you know, he sort of reveled in that romantic idea, you know, that was the seed or seat of creativity. And then once he got into GTD, he realized, wait a minute, I can actually experience the same kind of inspiration, but I don't have all the downside of all the stuff I just threw off the desk, you know. So you don't have to do that, you know, not required. But I sort of understand that whole idea that, you know, that a lot of creativity, there's an edginess that a lot of creatives really like and aspire to, and are probably even addicted to in their life.
Yeah, I remember hearing you say, I think it was in one of the TED Talks that you did, that crisis produces a calm. Or it forces it. Yeah, this idea of creative chaos. I mean, when I was first trying to explore my creative potential, I think it was maybe like 10 years ago, and I was doing it from a much more new agey perspective. And the people I was listening to, they would say things like, look at the desk of Steve Jobs, or look at the diary of Leonardo da Vinci. It's chaos. It's a mess. You know, Leonardo da Vinci is mixing pictures of inventions with shopping lists, and you can't even see the surface of Steve Jobs' desk. So chaos and creativity, I think, for a lot of people, for me in the past, were synonymous. I thought, like, this is what the mind in the space of a highly creative person has to look like.
Sure. By the way, another great example is Paul Smith, you know, in the UK. You know, look at his office. It is absolute chaos. He has every single, you know, toy and animal, stuffed animal, and all kinds of stuff around him. Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
But I get where you're going with that. But again, you know, if you've heard me say this before, I think you are most productive when you have the freedom to make a creative mess.
Indeed, yeah.
The problem is, when you're in a mess, you can't make one. So, you know, ask any good chef, you know, mise en place. That is a French, you know, phrase for any top-level chef, says, before we ring the bell and start and pull the trigger on tonight, everything has to be in place. All the food, all the machine. And then once the trigger's pulled, it's chaos. It is creativity. It is like, over here, no, not that. And it's like, you know, chaos. But they have to start clean.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I get into my work, I work in this studio, and every morning before I start, it has to be clean. There can't be anything, no distractions. And, you know, my system of GTD, I've been using it with Evernote, which for me has been perfect. Empty inbox, everything where it needs to go. At the very least, you know, it's cleaned once a week. But it's not always that externally imposed chaos GTD has helped me with. The mind doesn't really seem to know how to balance ideas, right? And when it comes to creativity, this sudden imaginative, aspirational idea can suddenly just seem to overpower something that has to be done in 2 hours. And then my mind will actually expend energy rationalizing my misprioritization. I will drop something I'm doing. Like, what time is it right now? It's 11:29 a.m. here. So let's say I have something that I have to give to somebody by 2. And then this idea will strike me. This still happens. It still requires a bit of discipline to deal with this. And I'll immediately feel the gravity of this new, you know, flash of an idea taking me in a new direction. So I think that having a system, having a trustworthy system to just say, okay, capture and return, has been extremely helpful with me, because the mind is chaotic on its own right. It doesn't matter what's going on around it or what your desk looks like.
Well, your head is an absolutely crappy office.
Right.
No, it is. Again, and you know now this is becoming, you know, idiom of the culture, hopefully, is your head's for having ideas but not for holding them. So if you're trying to hold on to it in your head, you're going to bounce around like a bad pinball in a bad pinball machine, you know, because that's how that works inside of there. So you need to externalize it so that the brain is then freed up to be crazy. That's right. But you need to capture the potentially meaningful results of that craziness in an external form. Otherwise, at some point, you implode.
Yeah.
You know, it can't, because the brain, the cognitive scientist now, basically, a couple of great books in the last couple of years have shown up that I've endorsed out there. Basically, your head evolved over however many million years to be able to survive on the savannah, to be able to eat and not be eaten, can manage four things that you can't finish in the moment. About four things is about all it can hang on to. Oh, I need to make the fire. Oh, I need to warn the village about the tiger. And oh yeah, my leather, vest got broken. I need to fix that. And I need to talk to my partner, about something. And that's about it. And your head can handle about that. As soon as you add any more than that, oh, come on. Then you lose perspective, to your point. You lose the balance, as you said. You lose the game in terms of the gestalt. And then you will be driven by latest and loudest. So just understanding the mechanics of that, I don't know how long I'm going to preach this, Brett. For the folks, get the head sucks as an office.
I first came to be aware of a concept like this when I was doing SAT tutoring. So I would work with teenagers on writing the essay. And I don't know if you remember, it was a while ago for me too. You got 25 minutes to basically encounter an essay question, react to it, and then write something like five or six paragraphs about what you read. They're usually either or, yes or no, binary choice type questions. Mm-hmm. And when I interviewed students about how they approached this, they all told me, yeah, well, I read the question and then I just started writing. I only have 25 minutes. And I realized that there was a value in kind of splitting up creative processes from organizational ones. Mm-hmm. Because, kids would just start writing right away. They would wind up with these wild, examinations of the topic, or they would have these bland, predictable treatments on the other hand. So I would encourage them to say, idea generation is a creative process. Do that first, then look at what you have and organize it. So it seems like those two pieces of advice line up.
Sure. Well, that's the natural planning model, if you read it, remember from my book.
Yeah,
As soon as you hold a vision, that's not true yet, automatically the brain is gonna go into wild creative spin. What are all the things that are potentially meaningful about this? And that's what you want. That's where mind mapping is. That's where brainstorming shows up. You can't help it. That's the natural process of the mind. And then once you get all that out, a natural organization will start to emerge. But if you try to start with organization, you're screwed.
So for those who are unfamiliar, the natural planning model is basically the who, what, where, when, why, and how. The first step is clarifying a purpose, the second, a mission or a vision, and then the third step, as you mentioned, is brainstorming, which is followed by organization and then planning next actions. But let's focus on the third one for a minute, David. What does the brainstorming process look like for you?
Oh, yeah. Well, I've got two different size pieces of, notebooks right here in front of me on my desk, a fabulous pen that's fun to use, one of those little ink pens. It's great. And I have Mind Manager on my computer, mind mapping software. And those all work for me. Most of my stuff, given that I don't have a real complex, I'm not working with really complex projects in a large scale. So, but the brainstorming, even if I were, the brainstorming aspect is not any much more formal than that. I just need a place to be able to jot ideas as they show up. And then later on, I can pull them all together and then create more of a formal structure as I might need to do that. But many times just a mind map's all I need. Hey, that's plenty for my next vacation or my next big trip or this next meeting that I'm going to have with somebody, or what are all the things I might want to talk to them about? How do I want to frame the agenda? Oftentimes I just sit down and brainstorm And the results of that are sufficient for me to be able to walk in and have my head clear about what to do.
Yeah, I'm really pleased with how after the initial implementation of the five steps, many other aspects of GTD, one that was really, really big for me, the altitudes.
Yep.
Like when I started, it was just like the five steps were enough because life was so chaotic. And I was working with a group of people who were also, adjusting to using getting things done. And they were talking about the altitudes. And I said, oh, gosh, I'll get to that someday. You know, I'm still just in this process of cleaning things up here. Mm-hmm. But then even areas of responsibility, the natural planning model, how this system just started to happen in the background, having a couple of years to really adjust to it has been very, very satisfying. One thing that I'm really not nailing yet, I can let you speak to that, but I want to move on after this to weekly reviews and how those can be helpful in the creative process. But mm-hmm. if you want to comment on, how this just starts to become naturally occurring, more of like almost a subconscious thing happening in the background, I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Well, many, many times, as I've coached very, very sophisticated folks out there in the world, high-level executives or whatever, and I spend, the first day truly just doing the five steps with them, getting them to get stuff out of their head, getting them to get a control of the mundaneness of their life as well as anything that's got their attention, and getting all that, captured, clarified, organized. And they step back. And sometimes the next morning they come in. I had one guy come in the next morning, and he was really pissed. He said, David, I didn't sleep a wink last night. I said, oh, my God, what happened? He said, I was so stoked. He said, I was dreaming. I was visioning. I was having all kinds of creative. And we didn't even have that discussion. All we did was release the bonds on his brain that then let this natural creative process sort of emerge. So I don't think anybody needs to go create anything new. You just need to get rid of the stuff that's in the way. That was sort of my basic fundamental approach to all of this. I had a big enlightening moment, one of those freeway enlightenment moments, I was agonizing many, many, many years ago about what was I going to do with my life? Oh, my God, I need to pick the right thing to do. I mean, I didn't know what to do when I grew up, but it had to be aligned with the spirit and with all the big stuff. And, And then I just had this big lightning bolt thing that said, David, not only in this lifetime, but probably a million others, you've created so many things. You don't need to worry about what to create. You just handle what's right in front of you with as much completion, elegance, and excellence as you can. And the next thing will automatically unfold for you. Relax. And I did. And that's been that way ever since. So, that at least for me worked. I don't know that works for everybody, but I think everybody has so overcreated in this life and many others too, that this whole idea of just finishing up and cleaning up and just dealing with what's right in front of you with elegance, I don't think you need to work too hard at the creativity side.
Yeah. Have you ever read a book called The Accidental Creative?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was
it's great.
One that I read in preparation for exploring this theme this month. And I think one of the important things—
Was that Todd Henry's book? I'm sorry.
It is Todd Henry, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, Todd's a big GTD-er, great guy.
Oh, terrific. Well, he talks in that book, I think one of the central takeaways is this idea of sustainable creativity, right. That it's not an in-the-moment kind of process. And it involves, being able to see life from different altitudes and then developing habits that allow for creativity when we need it, which is really important. And I think that's kind of what you're talking about there. And related to that is the process of the weekly review. So I would like to do a better job with this because I feel like I'm capturing a lot and never making use of it. And I think that's okay, but I just wonder what kind of opportunities I'm missing. My weekly review process usually takes place on Sunday evenings before the work week is going to begin the next day. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and my work week is just completely self-defined, but I do a mastermind group with five other guys who are doing similar types of projects at 9 p.m. on Sunday. So I usually do a review for, half an hour before that. And I just go through all my folders, look at my inbox, look at current projects, but it's never really more thorough than that. I'm wondering what yours looks like. And then I want to bring Evan Tobenfield back into the discussion.
Yeah, well, mine's no different than kind of what it should be for anybody. I sit down, I first of all look at what just happened on my calendar.
Yeah.
You know, the next couple of weeks, capture any, you know, random, you know, loose cannons that are flying around out there. I look what's coming forward on my calendar. Catch all the, oh, God, that reminds me, or oh, I need tos. I go back to all of my lists and then clean them up, because invariably, you know, there are a number of things that have been completed. I haven't had time to either complete or decide now where, now, you know, check status on them. So I just need to clean up my list, because what I don't want to do is put new stuff on old business. So I basically get clean, you know, that's the first part of the review, is sort of clearing up that stuff as best I can. And then I, you know, kind of lift up, and this can happen almost in any order these days for me. It's just, you know, there's an end game. I get to it however I get to it. But generally speaking, then I say, okay, what's happened this week? What new has been added to my calendar that's actually a project now for me? And get my project list updated.
Right.
And, you know, that project list is really the key core of the weekly review, is that next horizon up, you know, to kind of not stare at your navel and figure out your life purpose. That's nothing wrong with that. But this is the oh yeah, tires on my car. Oh yeah, hire the assistant. Where are we doing about that? Oh, that's right, bank credit line. What are we doing with that? Oh, that's right, the holiday coming up and we need that planning. And oh my God, my Aunt Susie's coming for a visit. What are we doing? And that's that level of game that you won't actually think at that level if you're just down on your social media, if you're down in the weeds. So you got to lift up a little bit. So it's that lifting up to there and say, what new things have shown up that I now need to capture and get into the system and systematize in terms of the projects themselves and the next actions. And, you know, that's pretty much it. You know, so it's not a major process, but having done it for 30 years, you know, just I'd feel uncomfortable if I didn't get that kind of refresh. I do weekly reviews for the same reason I take showers. If I didn't, the scuzz factor just gets too high. I can't stand that sort of backlog of unprocessed stuff.
Yeah, it's like a swarm of bees. That's how I described it. That's how it really felt to me.
Or getting nibbled to death by ducks.
Well, yeah, so it was just a matter of perspective, right? Because there are some things that can feel like bees that aren't. You know, I'm in a beekeeper suit, or the bees are tucked away in their bee containment unit, but they're still feeling like bees. So let me give you an example of what I mean in this weekly review process. I have this folder. I use Evernote. This is something else I wanted to ask you about. But I have this notebook stack in Evernote called Personal Pursuits, and one of the folders is just called Ideas. Whenever something is, oh, that was weird, that was interesting, I just put it in there. It's getting pretty big. There's a lot of like individual notes in there that I can never really cash in on. And I find in the weekly review process, I'm just ignoring these things that are someday maybes or things in incubation. I just never go in there and look, and I feel like I should, or I feel like there might be some benefit into venturing into that. But I could also see myself suddenly taking, you know, 3 hours to investigate things that might not ultimately produce anything valuable.
Yeah. Well, you've actually identified a pretty sophisticated aspect of this whole methodology. See, what you did was you created short-term relief by capturing it, mm-hmm. right? So it's not banging around in your head all the time in terms of that idea, that quote, I want to capture, that idea I want to capture. So good. So you captured it. But all this, now what you're doing is you're feeling a pressure from a little higher horizon. It says, how's my creativity doing? Am I really accessing all the creative energy that I should be playing with and that could add value to X, Y, and Z? I've done the same thing too. However, Evernote, as somebody described it, is it's capture only. He's spending all his day capturing everything in Evernote, but then he has no time to actually go back and access any of it and do anything with it. So that's kind of the good and bad news about the new technology. It allows you to capture stuff very easily, but then, you know, doesn't give you any automatic incentive to go back and curate it.
Yeah, so, okay. So right? This is a very valuable next question, right? The tools for creatives, or the tools for productive people generally. So the version of getting things done that I have, you use phrases like Palm Pilot and Lotus Notes, and there's people in my audience who don't know what either of those things are, for
that's
sure.
That's why I created a new edition.
Exactly.
I don't have any of that in there.
Exactly.
But see, back then, very few people were even aware of the digital tools and how they could be used to implement this methodology. So I wanted to give people some reality about that. And quite frankly, there's still no better tool than the Palm Pilot for list management. Too bad it died the way it went. But, you know, there was no simpler, more easily accessible, more fun list manager than the Palm. Too bad. But yeah, I understand. So we've moved on to, you know, a new app every week.
What are you using today? What is your system look like?
I still use Lotus Notes, and I use, a friend of mine, Eric Mack, built a program called eProductivity that actually overlays or underlies inside of Lotus Notes. So you had to be in Lotus Notes to do it. But he was my IT guy for many years, and he really understands this. So, for example, if I sent you an email, Brett, right now, and I'm asking you to do something, I click a little radio button on waiting for, and that automatically goes to waiting for, automatically puts your name on it, automatically date stamps it.
Get out of here.
But there's nothing else that even comes close to being doing that. But that's, you had to have the sophistication of Notes as a back end and the awareness of this kind of stuff that to be able to build it in. But don't hold your breath. We're not ready for a next gen yet of anything until the technology really moves to a whole new level of game. I know I've just been involved in a 3-year project with some of the best on the planet to try to research that. And you're just still going to have to deal with a list manager and cobble it together yourself, and still going to have to be fairly mentally labor intensive what you need to look at when.
So your feelings about Evernote, lukewarm or?
No, it's fabulous. I use it. You know, I know a lot of people, we have a white paper we wrote on the best practices for, you know, structuring Evernote on the GTD process, and a lot of people do that because it doesn't do anything near what mine does, because mine integrates with calendar and email as well, and you have to build some really funky workarounds in Evernote to try to make that work.
That has been the trick.
But I use Evernote. You know, I take pictures of every new bottle of wine that I love, so that, you know, when I go to the wine store, I just print out my white wines I love, you know, from their store. You know, they love it. I walk in with, you know, 3 pages of labels, and I say, you know, fill in my order, please, whatever you want. So, you know, no better tool than that. Evernote's fabulous. It's a reference tool purely for me, but it's a cool one.
Yeah, I've tried to make it the all-encompassing tool. There was this great comfort in being able to have everything in one place and to have that place portable. You know?
Yeah, but it doesn't have email or calendar in the way that you need that. And those are absolutely critical tools. The email is absolutely, as you know, a critical tool for input, and trying to manage that appropriately and trying to cut and paste or whatever.
Yeah.
If you have any kind of ADD-esque tendencies, you know, more than one click and you'll give it up.
Yeah, I mean, the best solution that I've come up with is, and I haven't pulled the trigger on this yet, but the paid version of Evernote has a kind of email. I wouldn't call it integration, is too kind a word, but you can forward emails to your inbox in Evernote, which is useful.
Any of those things can work, assuming that you spend the time to get it on cruise control, so you don't have to keep thinking about the process every time you want to use it.
Yeah, indeed. Absolutely.
And by the way, a lot of high-tech people I know are going back to paper planners simply because there's no clicks.
Well, I have this dry erase surface. It comes in rolls, and you can just unroll it and stick it to your wall. So it's actually probably good for people who are on the go or people who have, not stationary lifestyles. All you need is a roll of this stuff and 4 or 5 tacks, and you can have a dry erase surface, a large classroom size dry erase surface. The rolls that I have are 2 feet by 10 feet. Lots of room for exploration.
And by the way, you know, anybody who wants to try to use their iPhones or their smartphones to way to organize their life really don't get it. You know, those are really good tools for handling the reminder of the distribution of what happens from the large space thinking. But large space thinking, the smaller your tool, the smaller your thinking. And so, you know, what you just indicated was, look, I need big space. Me too. You know, I can't wait till I walk into a room that, you know, it knows then that I'm there based upon a chip I've got in myself or whatever, however it knows that. And because it's Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock, it instantly gives me a hologram of the stuff that I have told it that I would like to be reminded of in that particular context, you know, and as well as stuff coming up on my calendar for that night or whatever. And I walk into a much bigger space so I can then think from a larger perspective about all of it and see it all in a larger context and how they relate to each other. So everybody that wants to go smaller, I'm going, well, that's just an indicator of your brain.
Does this relate to your advice on the calendar from the original Getting Things Done, where you said calendar should only be used for firm scheduled commitments and nothing else? And I hate to pit two productivity greats against each other, but in January, I interviewed Kevin Cruz. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He does a lot of work on time management. Mm-hmm. And he said, look, really successful people, or the successful people that I talk to, he didn't make a general rule, but he said the successful people that I talk to and I've worked with, they don't make to-do lists. They all work from their calendars because they think in terms of minutes, you know, to maximize time efficiency. How do you feel about that?
Oh, way too anal for me. God, okay. I plan as little as I can get by with.
Yeah.
Right. And I need to be able to look at, see if any of those things will move, then you don't know what shouldn't have been moved. What's the distinction visually between the thing that was a total commitment to do called, if you don't make that call, you're screwed, versus, gee, I'd like to do that, you know, for a 20-minute period. And I understand what he's saying. Hell, yeah, you know, my general counsel would be, if you've got something that takes at least an hour of uninterrupted time to be able to take the action item on it, probably not a bad idea to put that on your calendar. But anything less than that, come on, life's, I don't know, my life, I don't know who this guy's talking to, but my life is much more fluid, spontaneous, and I like that.
Yeah, I think that spontaneity and fluidity in life is the kind of thing you have to earn. It was for me, anyway. If I just tried to live that way naturally, what the result is chaos.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. So that is all of my questions. I really, really appreciate you taking the time to join our show and to join our conversation. A lot of people have been, in my audience, really, really helped by the work that you've done. I'm sure you've heard that, you know, so many places before. But on behalf of my audience, I want to say thank you for making this accessible and, you know, fairly easy to embrace and integrate. It has made a huge difference in my life, and I know the lives of many people who follow what we do.
Well, thanks, Brett. Thank you for the invitation. By the way, great questions. And delighted, you know, I'm always enthralled by coming across people who actually get this. it's like, wow, that's really cool. So please feel free to use me as a resource whenever. Happy to hop on. And as you can tell, you and I could probably talk to the cows come home. So I'm happy to do that whenever you want to structure it again.
Yeah, sincerely, really appreciate it. And keep up the great work. And thanks for everything you've done.
My pleasure, Brett. Thanks.
All right. Take care, David.
You too.